ProFootballTalk.com. Now, let's bring in the mastermind, also from Football Night in America on Airs.
All right, and welcome. Florio from Pro Football Talk joins us this morning. Mike, how you doing?
Great, Joe. How are you, pal?
Man, I'm doing great. Mike, this one, the best Sundays coming up we've had in a long time. So many meaningful games, seven super sexy games to watch. This is one of the best ones we've had in a long, long time, man, starting at 1 and going until midnight for that late night game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with all of these teams clustered together in both conferences and four games left. A lot of playoff implications, a lot of games that are going to help shape who makes it and where they end up. And especially in the NFC, when you consider that one playoff berth is going to go to the best of four mediocre at best teams in the NFC South, you've got seven quality teams jockeying for five spots, which means one or two teams that in theory could get hot in January and run the table isn't going to have a seat at the table when the postseason begins.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. By the way, the news for the Dolphins was good yesterday and had nothing to do with their own team. Haloti Ngata suspended four games for performance-enhancing substances, better known, I guess, as Adderall, though a lot of people have already called in. I'm a little guilty, too. Is it always Adderall, or could it be something else?
Well, here's the thing. The new PED policy that was agreed to by the NFL and the NFL Players Association in September allows the league to publicly refute the dog ate my homework style excuse that we suspect has been offered up by players in the past who violate the PED policy. Because you know what, Joe? No one who's violated the PED policy has ever come out and said, I cheated. I took steroids.
Exactly.
It's always an excuse. It's always an explanation. And Nada's explanation is he took Adderall. And I guess there are reports that he was trying to focus and balance family life and football, etc. Regardless, he should have known he shouldn't be taking Adderall. Even with a prescription, you can't take it unless you have a therapeutic use exemption through the NFL. And even though in the offseason, it's now treated under the substance abuse policy, which has lesser punishment. In season, it's a four-game suspension. The NFL has not disputed anything Ngata has said publicly, which I think we can interpret means he really did take Adderall, and now the team and the player are going to suffer the consequences, and the Dolphins benefit from it because they don't have to try to block that guy on Sunday.
Man, he is really good. There's no question about that. Hey, you want to get into a little Washington Redskins drama that just doesn't seem to go away? Jay Gruden and RG3 starring in the roles of coach and used to be my starting quarterback. Man, is that ugly.
Well, it is. And, Joe, one of the things that fascinates me about it, the starkly different reports that are coming out of Washington and a lot of the locally generated reports point to the idea that Griffin is going to be done, that Gruden doesn't want him back, that the owner is befuddled by the downfall of Griffin. But from the national perspective, there really is a sense that Griffin could be starting again. Adam Schefter reported last night he could start as soon as this season. I've been told that they've yet to give up on this guy. And you know what? Common sense tells us you're not going to give up on the guy that you gave up three first-round picks and a second-round pick for that quickly. The guy showed high potential in 2012. He had the torn ACL. He had the rushed recovery last year. He had the Shanahan dynamic to deal with. Now he's learning a new offense. He had a dislocated ankle. He was out 5 or 6 weeks, learning it all on the fly. The concern, I believe, is that he doesn't currently have the right mindset. And they're trying to tear him down a little bit, build him up, and they're hoping that next year, when they get a first-round draft pick back for the first time since they drafted him, when they have their full cap space in hand, which they didn't have for 2012 and 2013 because the NFL took $36 million away because they treated the uncapped year of 2010 as, who knew, uncapped, they're in position to put the players around him. And that's a great irony here. He got called out for saying publicly, it's not just me, it's the other 10 guys. The reality is, it very well could be the other guys on the field because the team has been operating with one hand tied behind its back for the last few seasons. So I'm not ready, based on everything I've heard and everything I've seen and all the reports out there, I'm not ready to assume that we're going to see Griffin get thrown overboard by the team this offseason. And, we'll find out. Whether it's Griffin that's back, Gruden that's back, both are back, neither are back, we'll find out once Bruce Allen and Daniel Snyder break their silence when the season ends.
So you think there's a chance Jay Gruden could go in there and say, hey, guys, one of us is going because I can't win with this guy and I'm here to win games and RG3 ain't the answer here?
I think it's possible. I mean, we don't know what's really happening behind the scenes. There is an explanation that is floating around out there that Gruden and Griffin and the team are all on the same page here. and that Gruden is trying to undo the damage that occurred when this guy was coddled for several years. Remember, Gruden said that himself 2 weeks ago. Robert Griffin has been coddled. I don't mean that in a negative way. Well, has coddled ever been used in a positive way? Unless we're talking about like a baby. So I think that there is an effort to get Griffin humbled, to get Griffin focused, to give him time to rebuild that mindset that he needs to be successful. Yeah. And then if it doesn't work, you move on. But they got him under contract for one more year. They're going to pay him whether he's on the team or not. I don't know that they're going to find an acceptable trade partner, even if they were looking for one. I think they're going to try to fix this. They're going to try to salvage this, and there's a chance Gruden is in on it. Now, it's not helpful that these reports are coming out that Gruden wants him to be gone and no one's rebutting it. It kind of reminds me of what's going on in San Francisco with all these reports that Harbaugh's done and crickets from the front office tends to lead you to the conclusion that these reports are accurate. So at this point, I'd be surprised if they're ready to scuttle Griffin. But we're going to learn a lot when the season ends because Allen isn't going to talk until the season's over. Snyder doesn't talk until the season's over. Once those guys talk, I think we're going to know where this all is going to fit together or not in 2015.
Hey, Mike, one of the sexy games this Sunday is going to be the Colts taking on the Cleveland Browns because not just the game, but the whole Hoyer, Manziel waiting, warming up that arm the whole game and Hoyer looking over his shoulder. I think it's a really awkward situation in Cleveland right now for those two quarterbacks. What do you think?
I can't think of a situation in recent years where there's been more pressure on a starting quarterback because Mike Pettine had Brian Hoyer twist for 3 days. While everyone thought that Johnny Manziel was going to be named the starter, that you can't bench Brian Hoyer, put Manziel in, have Manziel lead the team to its only touchdown of the day, and then take Manziel back out. And so what's going to happen? If there's any struggle on Sunday, if Brian Hoyer throws a low pass, a high pass, makes a mistake, a bad read, fumbles, whatever, we're going to start to hear it from the crowd. And with each passing mistake, it's going to get louder, and it's more pressure on Brian Hoyer. You talk about ultimate pressure on a quarterback. He knows that he is going to hear it because the mob in Cleveland is aware that Manziel is on deck and ready to go. And from that perspective, you know what? It's the safe decision for Pettine to make because if Hoyer responds to the pressure, then the team benefits. But if he crumbles, then you go to Manziel. And part of it, too, is you got to be sensitive to the locker room. And I think that what Brian Hoyer did this week when he came out and said, hey, you don't get to 7-5 by being lucky, that was a message to the other players. And I think Pettine ultimately realized, you know what, I can't bench this guy because he's led this team to 7-5. And, you know, if this is a franchise that hasn't been relevant in a long time, these players want to try to get to the playoffs. They want to stick with Hoyer.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they all know, too, that you put in a young guy, I don't care if he's a former first-round pick or second-round pick, if you don't have experience, you're going to have some ugly plays. There's just no way around it to play well as a young guy if you have no experience. Hey, I want to ask you about this MVP thing. This J.J. Watt, everybody keeps pushing, and I know he's going to probably be Defensive Player of the Year, which is a nice award, but pushing this MVP thing the way Aaron Rodgers is playing right now, and the people go, well, we give it to a quarterback every year. Well, so what? I mean, it's their award then. I think it's ridiculous that we're putting Aaron Rodgers and J.J. Watt together for MVP.
Well, and here's the thing. We have to consider a couple of realities here. First of all, the season's not over yet. And 2 years ago, when we were ready to hand another MVP trophy to Peyton Manning, what happened? Adrian Peterson went bonkos down the stretch, crossed 2,000 yards, lifted the Vikings to the playoffs. Peterson's the MVP. DeMarco Murray, what did he do last night? 173 yards. And I know it wasn't on CBS, it was on NFL Network, but it's still a primetime game. And anybody who's paying attention knows what Murray did last night. Murray is making a late rush. And these other quarterbacks, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, depending upon what their teams do down the stretch, you could have dilution of the Aaron Rodgers vote. And ultimately, who knows what's going to happen? And it's an imperfect process. You have 50 voters, a lot of whom cover one team. Right. So when you cover one team, you know that team and you know the opponents. You don't know the whole league. And you've got some of the voters who are league wide. And it's not enough. I've said this for years, not that I want to vote because I really don't care. I don't care about the MVP award because they don't announce it until the night before the Super Bowl. I care about the Super Bowl then. So that's another problem with this process. We can have the discussion and the debate. And by the time they actually tell us who the MVP is, we've all moved on.
Right.
But I think Watt's got a chance. The bottom line is we got a quarter of the season left, and that's just gonna that's going to cement this thing one way or the other. It's going to be Murray, or it's going to be Rodgers, or it's going to be Brady, or it's going to be Watt, and a lot of it's going to be driven by what happens the final 4 weeks. And I have a feeling when we get to the end of the regular season, we'll all kind of know who deserves it.
Mike, I know you guys are mostly about football stuff on Pro Football Talk. How do you handle, speaking of DeMarco Murray, his nickname now, Spray Tan, with the text message? I'm just curious how you guys
– I don't know. I mean
– have you thought about it? How are you going to deal with that?
Yeah, I've seen it, and I usually – in situations like this, consult with Michael David Smith, who's the managing editor of PFT, which means he does all the stuff that I really don't want to do, like figure out which hot potatoes we're going to deal with and which ones we're going to just throw down on the floor.
I got you.
You know, for example, Michael Sam came out this week and said, I have the talent to play in the NFL, and TMZ turned that into a headline that I'm not in the NFL because I'm gay. And,
yeah.
You know, I wrote something about that today. And I thought about it for a couple of – because it's like you want to deal with these issues the right way. And sometimes – you know, the business that I'm in, most of the time, it requires immediate reaction. It requires immediate generation of content. Sometimes you need to reflect on these things for a little bit and really come up with a take that is informed and that isn't just knee-jerk. Just like any of this Ferguson stuff and what the Rams did, the first couple of days, I didn't know what to think about it.
Right.
It took me a while to think about it. And that's why, you know, talk about immediacy. When you're on radio, you can't say, I'll get back to you on Tuesday.
No,
something just happened. I want to think about it for 24 hours before I know how I feel about it.
Yeah, and then finally, I got to ask you, we've now had a chance, you and all the folks that work with you and everything else, I want to get your take on Ryan Tannehill as we go down the stretch in December here and where he is as a quarterback with the Miami Dolphins. I'm just curious what you think.
Well, I think the ultimate barometer for any of these guys taken in the first round of the 2012 draft is whether or not you're going to pick up the fifth-year option. And is there any doubt that the Dolphins would pick up the fifth-year option right now on Ryan Tannehill? And he's one of the few in the top 10 from the 2012 draft where you look at it and say it's a no-brainer. I think Luck, Tannehill, and Luke Kuechly of the Panthers are the three of those top 10 where you look at it and say definitely without question, you pick up the option. So that means, without question, you try to sign this guy to a long-term deal. And, you know, either have a franchise quarterback or you don't. And right now, there's enough that Tannehill's done where maybe, just maybe, with another year or two in Bill Lazor's offense, assuming that the coaching staff stays put, and who knows what's going to happen.
Right.
A lot of it depends on whether you get to the playoffs. But there's an argument to be made for consistency and continuity and letting Tannehill develop, and he's pointing in the right direction. And you know what? How do we really determine a franchise quarterback? You can look at a guy's contract, but Jay Cutler's got a big contract. Is he really a franchise quarterback? You do it on the field. You secure playoff performances, and then you get to the playoffs, and you do great things. You don't just disappear one and out. So Tannehill has it all in front of him. Just like last year. Remember last year, 8-6. How can you forget? 8-6, and they blew it the last two games,
man,
when they could have gotten in. It's lining up again. And will they blow it or will they get it done? And a lot of that is going to rest on Tannehill. So he's changing people's perceptions. The best way to change perceptions is to get to the playoffs and win postseason
play
games.
Well in December. Hey, Mike, as always, thank you so much for being with us.
See you, pal.
Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk.